I don't think we've ever seen anything like this before.
Two brothers.
Harley's got all the facts tonight. Jasper is a trivia weapon. Get out of his way.
A bunch of trivia questions.
Trivia is cool, and that makes these guys two cool guys.
Everything's on the line in today's episode of
How Do They Keep Getting It Right?
Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump?
Yes, giddy up. It is indeed trivia time here on Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump. My name is Jasper, one of your two co-hosts. Joining me is my brother and the other co-host, Harley.
How's it going?
Good. I've tried to add a little bit more showmanship into the introduction, a little bit more ringmaster sort of quality.
Yeah, I did read the review that said that you weren't showmanly enough.
Was there a review that said that?
Oh, well, it was slander on the back of a public toilet.
Really?
No.
Oh,
no.
Dear.
I could do that if you'd like, though.
Well, let's
get into the trivia.
Let's absolutely get into it. Do you have a fun fact to kick us off, just as a little palate cleanser?
I did have a fun fact. I don't know where it went in my head, though.
Do you want me to give you my fun fact
first?
Yeah,
that sounds good.
I absolutely can do that. My fun fact is that the word Pennsylvania is misspelt on the Liberty Bell, which is where the Liberty Bell is in the USA. So, well, it's misspelt by modern standards, but anyone looking at it today would go, that's a misspelling, because Pennsylvania is spelt with only one N at the start. So it's P-E-N, Sylvania,
yeah,
rather than P-E-N-N, Sylvania. Yeah. But it was an acceptable spelling at the time, although it's kind of aged badly. Kind of probably should cancel the Liberty Bell in a way.
Yeah. We've kind of reined it in since there. It was a bit wayward at that point.
Yeah, for sure. I saw some of its old tweets, and let me tell you, the Liberty Bell?
Yeah.
Well, it's ringing a lot. It should be called the Alarm Bell. Let me tell you that.
Holy dooly. Okay. My fact is, I've got a topic on colours for you.
Yeah. Spoiler.
So the Libyan flag was previously the least colorful flag with only one color, but since the revolution, it's changed.
Yeah.
I have seen sources citing now that there is still a definitively least colorful flag with only one color.
Ooh, can I guess what it is?
What is it?
Only one color.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I know, on a technicality, though.
Oh, is it because there's like shades of the same color? Is that?
No.
Oh, is it that one? Like, it's white. It's actually a tone, not a color. Is that
well,
it?
Well, there's a lot of flags that are white
that,
and another color.
Like Japan,
color.
Yeah, Switzerland. Yeah. I can't think off the top of my head. What is it?
Well, some sources say the Japanese flag is a red dot on an absence of color.
It's a bit of a technicality.
Yeah. Like, gold medal on a technicality is still a gold medal.
It feels very Japanese, like, quite philosophical. It's an absence of color.
Yeah.
It's
none of the sources were particularly, like, good. You know, it wasn't like
that's never stopped us before.
It's not like I got like on the Diet of Japan's like website and it had like a good explanation, but it was like, oh wow, maybe the Japanese are like edging on.
I guess white is an absence of color no matter what, though.
But like, I mean, Poland, Monaco, Singapore,
that's
Switzerland,
true.
All these countries are red and white, but apparently Japanese distinctly, it's not white, it's just an absence.
Yeah. Well, if they claim that to be the case, rather than like. Well, yeah, I guess if you ask someone from Monaco, a Monégasque person.
Is it?
That's the demonym. Yeah, it's one of my favourites. If you ask those people, like, what colour is our flag, I think they would say red and white.
Yes.
Wouldn't they? Like, they wouldn't say red and absence, would they? Whereas maybe a Japanese person would say that.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it's a very fun fact.
Yeah, let's get into the competition, though.
There's a distinct absence of questions so far, so let's fix that.
Nice.
Harley and Jasper have nominated three special subjects to be quizzed on by the other person. The three special subject round will feature five questions for each contestant. The trivia champ will be the person who answers the most questions correctly by the end of the game.
So those are the rules of engagement. Harley, what am I going to be hearing questions about on today's episode?
You're going to be hearing about scissors, paper, rock, throwback, and as we mentioned, colours.
Fantastic. And your topics are addicted to the shindig, mellow, and that's a first for me.
Excellent.
And I'm going to say it in that voice going forward.
Great.
Okay, do you want to kick us off in the first category?
I'll kick us off with scissors, paper, rock.
Round one.
The US $100,000 note was used for official transactions between Federal Reserve banks from 1934 for a short period. It featured the likeness of which early 20th century US president on it.
Okay, early 20th century.
Yeah.
So there's really only a couple that would fit that category. Woodrow Wilson, perhaps.
Hmm?
One of the Roosevelts? Or Was Theodore Roosevelt early 20th century? Or was he late 19th? I'm going to look really silly. I think McKinley was potentially early 20th century as well, or like kind of turn of that century. I'm just trying to...
Could be Warren Harding. We all love Warren Harding.
Warren Harding. Because 100,000, it's got to be someone good. Like, I don't think it's like James Polk, for instance. Like, I think it's like a... It's a main character president.
Yeah, yeah. Warren Harding, I don't think they were giving any accolades to after he passed.
Oh, really?
Like the most corrupt president.
Oh, really? Yeah. Damn.
But he passed in office before any of it came to light. He went down a hero in his life. Oh.
That's the way you want to go out.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I've just narrowed it down a little bit
more. Not Warren Harding. Good. I was thinking I wasn't. I'm going to say that it's someone that in recent... She said it was 1930s, right?
1934.
Yeah. So I think in the 1930s, the achievement that America would have been most proud of in recent history would have been Woodrow Wilson and like the League of Nations and getting through World War One. So I'm going to say that it was Woodrow Wilson.
Absolutely correct.
Oh, fantastic.
And it's one of few notes that was never in any sort of circulation, and it actually can't legally held even by collectors in
really?
The private world. Yeah.
Wow. Mm. Are there photos of what it looks like?
Yes. It just looks like a $100,000 note with...
That's still really cool, though.
Yeah, I mean, you can Google what it looks like. It's a pretty cool... It would be a cool thing to flex on your mates if you had one, you know?
Like the $1 trillion bill in The Simpsons.
Exactly, yeah. Wow. Moving on. For what 2017 film did Dwayne... The Rock Johnson, except via a video, the Golden Raspberry for the Razzie nominee So Rotten You Loved It, while his co-star Zac Efron was nominated for Worst Actor.
So Rotten You Loved It. Is that what the category is called?
Yes. The Razzie nominee So Rotten You Loved It. This film won it, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson accepted it via video.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I think he's a good dude, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah, I think he's got a good sense of humor. Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking to my dad about this the other day. I feel like the reason that Dwayne The Rock Johnson has done so well is because, like, he's always smiling. That's not the only reason.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, for a big dude, you know, sometimes big people, I'm one myself. people go, oh, that guy's a bit scary. But I think the fact he's always smiling and up and about
means
he's almost like a big teddy bear.
He looks, he's like Shaq in that he seems like very, like, you aspire to be like him, but he seems very relatable still.
Definitely. Yeah. Shaq is like that as well, yeah. I actually think I'm stalling, but I think I know this.
Yeah.
I think Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Zac Efron starred together in Baywatch.
Absolutely. 2 for 2. Nice.
Fantastic.
So my fun fact was going to be that I watched this in Italy on holidays overdubbed.
Really?
And it was probably even worse than the English version. But my fun fact, I found out my research on The Rock, because I wanted a Rock question. Mm-hmm. His dad's name, professional wrestler, Rocky Johnson.
Really? Yeah. Is that why he's The Rock?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
He grew up in... he went to school in New Zealand for a little bit as
really?
Well.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
I've got a fun fact about watching a movie overdubbed in another language. When I was in France on exchange in high school, we were watching one of the Harry Potters, and they kept like talking about baguettes. And I was like, this is weird. Like, baguette, like... Blah, blah. And he's like, Harry, montrez-moi baguette, blah, whatever. And I was like, that's so strange. Turns out baguette is a French word for wand.
There you go.
Which makes sense, right? Because like a baguette is a wand of bread.
Yeah, yeah.
But like it just kind of like it takes you out of the moment a bit if you're not a native French speaker. When like there's a really high tension moment, it's like, turn out your baguette.
Yeah.
It's just a bit like, I don't know. I don't know if it's really quite getting across the vibe.
No, fair. Well done. 2 from 2 Thank so you. Far. Flying off to a start. Okay. The scissor jump in high jumping was all but replaced by what alliterative high jump maneuver in the competitive versions of the sport?
Fantastic. I think I'm going well so far.
You are,
I actually know this. And it was, I think, pioneered by a man who has one of the all-time great sporting names, Dick Fosbury.
Well, now you've ruined the fact afterwards.
It's a good name,
isn't
it?
It's a good name,
You know, speaking of good sporting names, I will answer this in a second. I just want to give people a chance to think about it. I was covering the rugby union on the weekend. I was covering the Waratahs.
Mm.
Great day out, by the way.
Yeah,
I hadn't been to a Waratahs game in a long time. Really fun. And I was covering the women's Waratahs game beforehand, and she wasn't playing, but the captain of the women's Waratahs, she's injured at the time, the captain of the women's Waratahs team is named Piper Duck.
Piper Duck.
That's her name.
Wow.
And like, one of the sub-editors messaged me going, just checking, that is, like, that's not a typo, that's her name. And I was like, that's her name.
Piper Duck,
what of it? Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's a cool name.
Yeah,
even,
yeah.
like, Duck as a last name is kind of rare. Like, I've never met, like a Matt Duck or, like, Sarah Duck.
You get, like, Duckworth.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
But, like, her family was like, no, that's not crazy enough.
Yeah.
Oh, name that goes well with Duck. That pairs nicely.
Yeah.
Piper Duck. I know that this, well, I believe that this is... the Fosbury flop. I think it's called.
Absolutely correct. And it first debuted in the 68 Olympics in Mexico City. 21-year-old Dick Fosbury. Can you imagine at 21 reinventing the
sport? Changing the game.
Yeah. Amazing.
It works though, hey? Because like that's the jump where for people that maybe can't think of it, it's where you jump almost like head first and like momentum carries your legs over.
Yeah. But yeah, like, and it allows you to jump like well over your body height if you're athletic.
Yeah. Rather than like just kicking your legs up, like which now that you think about it, is ludicrous. So that was the way people used to do it.
Yeah.
We used to like fully like, wow, but, like legs up.
Well, Dick Fosbury like noted that in high school.
Yeah.
And like started doing his technique at like 15.
Wow.
Yeah, and like perfected it by the 68 Olympics. You know, crushed it, records, won the gold.
Game changer.
Good on you, Dick.
Good stuff, Dick.
Yeah. Okay. Dick. Moving on, we got another US president question.
Fantastic.
It's a mainstay of mine.
Yep.
Who was the most recent serving US president to have their face sculpted on Mount Rushmore? You see the rock kind of thing here?
Yeah. I should know this because I was thinking about Mount Rushmore the other day. Like just in a trivia, way. I know that Lincoln is on there, and I think he's on there. I feel like he is comparatively recent compared to like the founding fathers. Mm. I don't off the top of my head know which ones are definitely on Mount Rushmore. It sounds like something I should know, but I think it's potentially like Jefferson, Washington, someone else, Lincoln. I reckon are the four. Jefferson and Washington definitely before Lincoln. Jefferson, Washington, maybe like Madison potentially. I'm going to go with Abraham Lincoln.
I like the logic, but believe it or not, it's Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, yeah, actually, I should have guessed that.
But it's crazy. When they started sculpting it, he'd only been out of office for 18 years.
But yeah, I guess if they got to him at the end, like, takes a while to do the other three heads. Maybe it's like, you want to check Teddy on? Yeah, all right. Yeah, it was a bit of room at the side here.
Yeah. He's actually right in the middle, smack bang in the middle. It's,
wow.
Yeah, his prime position.
Was he still alive?
No, he died in like 19. He died about 10 years after office. He started it in 1927.
Okay,
they finished it in 41. So wow. When he got in, FDR was.
Do you reckon there was any? Because they were distantly related, hey?
Yeah, they weren't particularly related.
Do you reckon like it was a bit of like, come on, put my 15th cousin on there? It looked pretty good.
Oh. You know what? I don't know where I heard this, but apparently, Teddy Roosevelt was closer related to FDR's wife than he was to FDR himself.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. So not very related.
Yeah, not very related, despite the name.
Not and a Nepo baby.
I've also printed out, you know, there might be another face entering Mount Rushmore, right?
Who?
So there was an article by the New York Times and CNN claiming that Trump wanted his face on Mount Rushmore. Oh my God. And I've got his tweet written here.
Yeah, yeah.
His response was, "This is fake news by the failing at New York Times and bad rating CNN. Never suggested it, although, based on all of the many things accomplished during my first 3.5 years, perhaps more than any other president, sounds like a good idea to me."
That sounds like satire.
It does. No,
my gosh.
Tweeted that.
Yeah. So he was like, it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy where he was like, "This is bullshit." Although, while we're on
when
the
you
subject,
think about it,
it's not that crazy.
And he also tweeted a photo of him standing in front of Mount Rushmore where his face was clearly put next to them. Like,
do you reckon he went there deliberately just to get that photo?
Oh, I would imagine. So you can use Air Force One for whatever you want if you're the president,
that's true.
Right?
Where would you take Air Force One if you had just go anywhere?
If Joe Biden threw me the keys for the weekend.
Beam me up, Scotty. Go wherever.
Area 51. I want to chill with the aliens.
That's a good one. Not even just in the US, though. Is there anywhere further afield you could go?
Area 51 is the most, like... like, that's just the most mysterious place in the world to me. Where do you reckon?
That's a pretty good one. Oh, I reckon I'd go up to Alaska somewhere, maybe.
Just for the lols?
Yeah, maybe like, a bit of a flyover of Alaska. Just check out the mountains and the snow and stuff. Maybe like dip really low somewhere, like through a valley or something. I probably can't really do that in a jet, but try that out. Maybe dip down to American Samoa, get some cocktails, like chill on the beach for a bit.
Yeah.
Come back. I think what I'd want to do, though, is spend a lot of time in the actual plane.
Oh, yeah.
Because it'd be quite cool on board, wouldn't it? Almost like in a cruise ship, you know what I mean? Like, it's like part of it is where you're going.
Yeah, I believe there's a water slide that goes outside the vessel.
That's awesome. And there's like a kids club as well.
Yeah.
Like,
drop the kids off. A little bit of an upstairs casino if you're fancy.
A bit of an Air Force One Cass.
Yeah.
One arm bandit.
I'd knowing my interests, I'd want to have a try at the controls personally, yeah, but yeah.
For sure. I'd like to have a try at that as well. Might not go as well if I do it compared to you, but yeah, want to have a little turn.
Yeah. Well, you know, we could both have a go.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
Bug Naked could be there.
Bug Naked could be there. Sorry, back. Yeah.
That's going to be weird if anyone hasn't listened to that episode yet.
Yeah. So 3 from 4, still doing really well. Final question. You're not going to like this question. To the nearest 10 meters...
Yeah.
How far was the furthest anyone's ever thrown a paper plane?
That's cool. Was it you at that pub that time we had to do a tiebreaker?
Just about could have been, but no, it was not.
There was, for anyone who doesn't know, the pub that we go to, that's been referenced on this podcast before, we had a tiebreaker once for first place. It was us and another team, and the tiebreaker was make a paper plane, and the other lady went first, and I think it actually went backwards, her attempt. It was terrible.
That wasn't great.
And then professional plane man, Harley Bruce, came up and... Well, I think that woman started crying.
Yeah, yeah. I made a woman cry in a pub. Yeah. That's one of my greatest achievements. Anyway, what do you reckon? To the nearest 10 meters.
Nearest 10 meters. So that's we're talking a long time, probably. Like a long distance.
Yeah, yeah.
10 meters. Like, not like kilometers.
Do you want to hear how serious this attempt was, though?
Of course.
It occurred at a US Air Force base.
Oh, wow.
And the person that threw it was the different to the person who... designed it, in quotes.
Wow.
So like, this is like a military operation.
Like a special operation plane fold. Execute.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, yeah, so it's like a professional thrower.
Yeah, like this, yeah. They weren't messing around.
Do you think that the airplane... Oh, I mean, I better guess first before I ponder anything else. Let's say that it flew for 190 meters.
That would be way cooler than the actual answer. It flew for 69.1,
yeah,
100, so about 70 meters.
70 meters, okay.
But I looked
190 up... 190 is a bit ludicrous, actually, now that I think about it. Although, it's military, you know, they can do special stuff.
Yeah, he had afterburners on it.
Yeah.
I was looking at it, there's all sorts of records and competitions for this. Like,
yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
Someone as well, and this is really cool, the highest altitude throw ever was from 35,000 feet, and it was part of a high school science club activity.
Wow.
I don't know how exactly... They basically launched it from some sort of a balloon, and so it wasn't actually thrown, but I don't know how they tracked that the balloon let it go at 35,000 feet, but yeah, like high school students have got the highest altitude throw record.
When you first said that, I was wondering whether it was just like a high school that happened to be at a really high altitude, like Mount Everest Secondary College.
Yeah, like K2, K-12.
That's genius. All right, let's move on. So
you're on 3 from 5 from round one.
Fantastic. So your category for round one, just to remind Harley, is Addicted to the Shindig, which is a line from the Red Hot Chili Peppers song Can't Stop, for anyone that doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Can't Stop, Addicted to the Shindig. So as it turns out, finding questions about being addicted to shindigs, a little bit tricky. So there are a few about shins and a few about addiction, sort of.
Yep.
Laughing at addiction, but addiction broadly. And there is actually one that is about being addicted to the shindig. So
that's incredible.
I know you would have studied up on that.
Yes.
So anyway, without further ado, question one in Addicted to the Shindig.
Mm-hmm.
The tibia, otherwise known as the shin bone, is the second largest bone in the body. But what is the largest?
I think the largest is the rhyming brother of the tibia, the fibia perhaps. That sounds pretty plausible. I'm not much of like the head bone's connected to the whatever bone kind of thing.
Yeah. Be a good time to know the words to that song, let me tell you.
Yeah, it would be. The thigh bone, it might be a bone. The thigh bone doesn't sound very scientific or Latin.
Yeah.
But I reckon it sounds quite long. So, fibia, maybe, is the shin bone two bones and fibia is the other half of it or something? I reckon I'm going to go thigh bone and then appeal on a technicality if you wanted the Latin name.
So you are correct that that's what the bone is.
What's it actually?
Let me just ask our live studio audience, should I give it to him? They're saying yes. The bone is called the femur.
Oh, the femur.
Yeah, that's the largest bone in your body. So, but you're right, that's like the top bone of your leg. The fibia, which you alluded to, is in the lower leg as well. But the longest bone in your body is the femur.
The femur, the thigh bone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Thanks, audience. Thigh bone. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. You guys owe me. don't throw anything. Okay. I had a fun fact. Oh, thigh bone. Sounded a lot like chicken then when you were talking about like thighs. Like,
yeah.
I'm hungry for chicken now.
Oh, great. So that was your fun fact.
Well, you know, I didn't think there was much to add about the femur. Is my fun fact is the femur, the thigh bone is connected to the leg bone. The leg bone is connected to the ankle bone. The ankle bone. Oh, we could be here all day.
Is that what the song's like? It's not that scientific.
No, I don't think that it's not like the scapula's connected to. I don't think it's like that.
Okay.
I think it's like the arm bones connected to the. Which that song, to be fair, you can kind of tell all those things just by looking at your own body, can't you?
Yeah. I don't know what clown wrote that, but yeah. Yeah, it's like Ramalama Ding Dong.
I think Andrew Lloyd Webber probably. All right, question two. One of the best known songs by American band Jane's Addiction, Been Caught Stealing, features what unusual noise due to lead singer Perry Farrell bringing an animal with him to the studio on the day of recording?
Been Caught Stealing.
That's the name of the song.
And he brought an animal.
It's an animal with him in the studio.
Jane's Addiction.
Jane's Addiction.
A barking's not weird. Like, I'm thinking like a donkey's braying.
Can you imagine like, hey guys, Perry, what the hell, man? We got to do a full album today. No, I just saw this donkey on the side of the road. It was the last one. I had to get it.
Yeah. I'm thinking, yeah, like a donkey's braying. I don't know. Like, what does a mountain goat make? Like a...
No, that was more the donkey. What's a mountain goat's more like a...
I don't think he's bringing any like farm animals that you'd need a trailer for into the recording studio. He hasn't like used a horse float just to piss off the rest of his band.
Well, it's the 80s and 90s, mate. Anything
is
was
that,
going.
Is that when Jane's Addiction?
Yeah, they were late 80s into early 90s.
I reckon he either brought a cat or a dog, frankly.
Okay.
Like, it wouldn't make sense for a fish to have made noise, you know. I'm just going to say it's his dog barking or something avant-garde like that.
It was his dog barking. So it wasn't actually intended to be on the song. Let me tell you the story. Farrell said it was pure coincidence that his dog Annie ended up on the track. He'd adopted Annie from a shelter, but brought her to the recording studio that day because she was struggling with being left alone because she was a shelter dog, I think, had some issues from her past life. Annie began barking during the recording of Being Caught Stealing when Perry started singing. And so therefore, Annie sort of just ended up on the track because they liked it. And there we go. It's one of their most famous songs today.
There you go. When Annie passed, did they replace her for live touring? Or?
Yeah, I wonder. I hope so.
That'd be kind of funny if there was like a dog that toured with them for that purpose.
Do you think they'd have to have a few? Like when there's a child actor in a musical or something, like you've got we've got like the Fido cast is on today. And then
Yeah,
interesting.
Ah.
Well, you're two for two, so you're going pretty well here.
Awesome.
Question three. Which Melbourne-based AFL team is sometimes informally referred to as the Shin Boners?
Oh, the Shin Boners.
Yeah.
This is going to be hard, right? Because a lot of them, adopted their nicknames relatively late in the piece. Mm. You know, like the Essendon Bombers were founded well before Essendon had an airport or bombers were even considered as an aircraft type.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually.
So the Shin... Well, I know the Blues are the Blue Baggers. I would have... Like, it's going to be a team that I don't know many people supporting.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon Shin Boners kind of make sense for Bulldogs because they'd be running around with a bone in their mouth.
Interesting.
I reckon... I'm going to go Bulldogs, I reckon.
It's not a bad guess. It's actually North Melbourne. So there's a couple of theories as to the origin of this nickname, but according to the club itself on their website, it traces back to players working in local abattoirs during North Melbourne's early years because it was kind of a working class part of Melbourne at the time. But North itself, like you said, the formal nickname, the Kangaroos, came a little bit later. Yep. That was in the 1950s that was adopted. But yeah, Shin Boners, and like the Shin Boner spirit is kind of sometimes referred to as like club spirit at North Melbourne.
See, my logic was absolutely right. I don't know if I've ever met someone. I'm from Sydney, admittedly, but who supports North Melbourne. I don't know. They've been traditionally quite bad in my lifetime, if my memory serves me correctly.
Early in our childhood, they were a bit better.
Okay.
But I mean, the only way it's kind of up compared to now.
Yeah.
Particularly because there are more teams now, so it's physically impossible to finish 18th when we were kids. So
Did they finish 18th last season?
No, they didn't last season, but they've kind of been hovering around the bottom of the ladder lately. So anyway.
The Shin Spooners, am I right?
Oh, you're absolutely right. Definitely. The Shin Boners need to get a bit harder. All right. Question four. Japan's high speed rail network, the Shinkansen.
I was hoping that would be the fact.
Launched in 1964 to coincide with what event?
I think I know this.
Really?
Well, we were just talking about the Mexico Olympics, 68.
Mm.
64 was, I believe, the Tokyo Olympics. And, well, I don't want to be too confident, but there, I know that there was an Olympics back in that era.
Yeah.
And there was, yeah, there was definitely a Tokyo Olympics around then. And that would have been a great time to show off how fast you can make a train.
That's actually a really good point. Yeah, I wonder if that was part of it, that it's like, oh yeah, you think these people can run fast? Yeah, look yeah. how fast this train can run.
Yeah, exactly, you know. Like, just really puts it into perspective when you're watching the stadium and a Shinkansen flies past doing 100 yeah. meters in like 1.8 seconds.
Do you think it was a way to like one-up the athletes? Tokyo Olympics is correct, by the way. But do you think it was a way to one-up the athletes? It's like, oh yeah, like, you might have run the running race, but we've run the train race. No, it wasn't part of the Olympics, but, you know.
Perhaps, yeah, yeah, I don't know.
So, you're correct. The first Shinkansen line began running 10 days before the Olympics opening ceremony.
Wow, 10 days?
10 days, yeah. These days, there are 9 Shinkansen lines running trains that go as fast as 320 kilometers an hour or 199 miles per hour.
They're so cool, those machines.
They're very. Yeah. Did you get to go on when you were in Japan last?
Well, you were there.
Oh, when we were in high school. Yeah.
In high school, yeah. No, we definitely went on. We had a J-Rail pass, I believe.
Yeah, I went on one when I was in Japan. I went on one when I was in Japan last time because I cancelled my connecting flight between Tokyo and Osaka. And at first I was kind of bummed because I was like, oh, like, this is going to be a pain in the ass. Like, I'm getting there at night. Like, what am I going to do? I was like, you know what? Let's turn this negative into a positive.
No,
you're going to get the train.
Yeah.
And you know what? It was actually like not that much slower.
No, yeah. It's amazing the amount of people that travel domestically by plane in Japan when the Shinkansen system is as good as it is.
It's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah.
Well done. So, this is the last question, and this is the one that is about being addicted to the shindig.
Okay.
Oof. Okay. In 2006, a group of 40 dancers broke the record for the longest dance party at the Quay Front in Wexford, Ireland. Within 5 hours, how long did the record breakers dance for?
Within 5 hours?
Within 5 hours.
Wow.
They danced for a long time.
I'm going to say they danced for 55 hours because 55 sounds like a nice number where, you know, you're not going to like pass out and end up with serious problems. And within 5 hours, that puts me between 50 and 60. And 2 days sounds like a nice time to call it quits.
Did you know this fact?
No.
It is 55 hours flat.
No way.
Well, yeah. So it's 55 hours. 9 dancers dropped out during the marathon dance party, which began on 27th of October 2006.
Quitters.
And ended more than 2 days later. I think 9 is actually not that many to drop out.
Of 40?
Like,
so it's a quarter. It's nearly a quarter of the world a week.
Yeah, but it's like, I don't know. I'm getting sick of dancing before dance 55 anymore. Hours. Yeah. Can you imagine like that existential crisis you're going through while you're doing the sprinkler? Like, man, life's got me dancing, and I just want to stop.
I feel like that was
kind of... But in an Irish accent.
I feel like that was kind of like peak Guinness World Records era as well. Like the 2008 Guinness World Records book, these people like, especially being made by Guinness, these people like would have been like, oh my God, yeah, you were in that dance party, weren't you? Oh, yeah, I did part of it.
Like, yeah, you know, oh, can like, you imagine the shame? Yeah, like, yeah, I just got sick of dancing after 40 so hours. I had to stop.
The thing about doing the jig is you could only do it for... maybe 2-3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours max. I could not do it for 55.
What's a good point? What would your tactic be? If you're dancing for 55, do you sort of go, all right, first hour?
Slow dance.
Solely? Oh, yeah, good idea.
Surely dance.
Is that a dance party, though? Kind of, I guess.
Yeah, I would think so.
I think for me, I'd almost be like, all right, 55 hours, I'm going to segment this into like first hour, solely just shuffling. Second hour, sprinkler only.
Yeah.
Third hour, the worm. Just keep going.
Just keep
going. Don't get off the floor until you've wormed your little heart out. I think that's where... Because like if you were just like sort of doing the white guy dance, just sort of just like shaking your arms around a bit, after a while, surely you'd get very sick of it. You need to maintain your sanity.
Yeah. How much beer do you reckon was involved? A lot, I would think.
Yeah, probably beer and perhaps other substances as well.
Yeah.
I don't know that for a fact, so I probably shouldn't make any accusations. But
yeah, we're going to get sued.
As a fun fact, though, the Guinness World Records will not accept applications for breaking this record unless the applicant is 16 years old or over.
Really?
Yeah, strange, hey?
Yeah, child labour laws, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. But the dancers were aiming to raise funds for the Irish Cancer Society and Our Lady's Hospital for Sick Children in Crumlin. And there were 15 DJs booked to serve the party.
That's cool.
That's cool, hey. Cool,
yeah. Nice.
Well, at the end of Addicted to the Shindig, Harley, You're on 4 points and I'm on 3 points. So a tightly run affair heading into round number two.
Excellent.
Round two.
So remind us, Harley, what am I hearing questions about in round number two?
You're hearing questions about throwback.
Fantastic.
Now, looking over it, I was struggling with this initially. And then I realized it would be really funny to make it all about historical throwing.
Yeah.
But I didn't reread it, and I've got one that's purely about throwback and four that's about historical throwing.
Which is throwing things.
Yeah, in history, because like throwback is like history, throwing. Yeah,
that's clever.
Yeah, I know. I don't get enough credit at times.
So all these questions are about throwing stuff?
In history.
Okay.
Okay. You don't look satisfied with
no,
that?
No, I'm just intrigued to see where you go with this.
Well, I'll start off with the one that's just purely throwback. That's not about historical throwing.
Okay.
Throwback is a flavor of what soft drink? Having also been like subtexted as soda shop with the slogan, made with real sugar.
So it's like a brag, made with real sugar.
Mm.
That's really strange. Like, guys, it's got real sugar.
Well,
it's like,
what? In Australia, that's not so strange, because what do we use for sugars?
What?
We use cane. In a lot of part of the world, they use high fructose corn syrup.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
Like, if a lot of the world, USA, they kind of did away with corn, with cane and started using corn syrup.
Oh, sure, okay.
The other big one they used to use was beet.
Beet?
Beet, like as in the...
Beet sugar.
Beet sugar, yeah.
Wow, there you go. Sugar beet.
So, yeah, it's a soft drink, so like vanilla Coke or like, you know.
So it's called something throwback.
Throwback was initially the underscoring name for it when it came out. Soda shop, it's more recently been called, with the slogan, made with real sugar.
But this isn't a drink that I definitely would have heard of.
Yes, you would have heard of the overlying brand of this.
Okay, so it's called like Coke throwback or something.
Basically, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I don't think it's Coke, but... what are my other options? Pepsi, like Dr. Pepper, Sprite, Fanta. Fanta throwback. Don't mind that. Made with orange sugar, like sugar from orange, maybe. Orange juice. I don't really know. I'm going to go with Fanta.
You said it. It's Pepsi.
Oh, no.
It was meant to taste like when you went in like to a fountain in like the 50s and they pumped it and did it.
Remember those days well.
Yes, yeah. Well, and it was launched in 2008.
Okay.
And from my reading, it seems a little bit like the McRib, where it comes back every few years and we're not as excited as we probably are expected to be.
Mm.
You know, I heard the McRib referred to, well, I read it in a tweet, as the deadbeat dad. Like, it comes back every few years and, like, we're meant to be excited, but we're really not.
The
like,
McDad.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so tough break on that one, but we're on the open road of historical throwing now.
Fantastic.
So, in December 2008, just prior to leaving office, George W. Bush was famously the subject of a shoeing incident.
Yes.
During a press conference in which country?
Yeah, I'm aware of this. I can actually picture this incident where this bloke, I think he was a journalist, in fact.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, honestly, I've been doing it wrong as a journalist.
Yeah.
Next time a sports player is rude to me or doesn't give me the right answer, I'm just going to take off the Nikes and give him a real good throwing.
Yeah, if Carlton tanked this season, like halfway through, just... You know, let the coach know how you feel.
Absolutely.
Vote with your feet, so to speak.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, well, you're on today. That was great. I think, well, okay, that time of year, which countries had potentially problematic relationships with the US? Iraq, probably the first one. Just thinking that part of the world, I can't really think of anywhere else that would be more topical. So I'm gonna go with Iraq.
You're absolutely correct. It was Iraq. And you're absolutely correct. It was thrown by a journalist who received 3 years in prison.
Really?
Was released after 9 months for good behavior and the lack of a prior record.
So do you think like the fact that he hadn't thrown his shoes at anyone in the prison, they were like, he's getting better.
He's reformed, yeah. So I think he initially received three, got two on appeal of some description, and then was released after 9 months. But honestly, an Iraqi prison is like a political dissent like against George W. Bush. You know, he probably...
would have had a great time in prison. That would have been like, what a legend.
Yeah, actually, to be fair.
Shoe guy.
Shoeman.
Absolutely.
Anyway, one from two so far. You're doing very well. What modern athletic events featuring throwing are detailed in the Iliad and the Odyssey as having been competed as in during the ancient Olympic Games?
Wow. So an old... sort of Olympic event that has throwing.
They're current Olympic events that have throwing.
Yeah.
That according to the Iliad and the Odyssey were actually competed in the ancient Olympics.
Are we looking for one event?
Well, there's two events.
Wow. Do I need both?
Yeah, then neither of them are particularly... Actually, no, I'll let you get away with one.
I've got three in mind.
Yep. Yeah.
Javelin, shot put, and hammer throw are the three I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all throwing. If you're not good at throwing, take a hike. We don't want you in this sport. So I think it's going to be one of those.
I'll let you go for one of them. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to just you wouldn't want to get it wrong now, because I think two out of these three are correct. Javelin feels the old-timiest of this one. I'm going to go with javelin.
You're absolutely correct. The javelin is referred to as spear throwing in the Iliad.
Much better name.
And in the Odyssey, Odysseus absolutely flexes on the competing Phoenicians by is described as easily winning discus, disc toss.
I think a discus
in the Odyssey, but yeah, just like easily winning it, and then I think he goes on to win some other events as well.
Did
like,
Odysseus write that part of it? It's like,
I don't know.
Then Odysseus went and killed it at discus.
Yeah, I like it, like easily on it. It's not even like he like it's a tight you're on a fair. He just tosks that disc.
Absolute canter for Odysseus.
Absolutely, yeah. In 1911, sub-lieutenant Giulio Gavotti entered the history books during the Italo-Turkish War for throwing four grenades on a Turkish-supported camp of troops.
Mm.
Why was his throw of four grenades so notable?
Wow. So what he...
1911.
Yeah.
Four grenades. Didn't even kill anyone in these camps.
Yeah.
Very notable nonetheless.
Okay. So didn't kill anyone?
Didn't even kill anyone.
Is maybe the fact it didn't kill anyone and it was notable is the fact that... Okay, it's either that it's like one of the first times a grenade was thrown maybe, or it's that the grenades were thrown at him and he threw them away to save people.
That would be really cool.
Do you reckon? Like he was like, one, two, three,
yeah,
four.
Rambo Gavotti, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
Like it's got like real historical significance, this, isn't it, Bent?
I can't think of any reason, so I'm going to say that he... threw grenades to say like they were thrown behind enemy lines and he threw them away to save people.
Look, I like your logic. This was actually the first time that a plane was used for combat bombing.
Oh, sure, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I've done you dirty by doing a bit of a plane fact.
Oh,
but
okay.
Yeah, it was in a biplane, basically just tossed him out in the direction of it.
Didn't kill anyone,
didn't damage anything.
Killed
but
Giulio?
I mean, if you think about it, like that was like the first time any plane was used for shooting or bombing or anything. And then by World War One, they were doing heaps of it, you know, Red Baron and everything into World War II.
Yeah.
You know, into the modern day fighter jets. Back to Giulio.
You didn't even hit anyone, though. So
No. Well,
switch
I mean,
on, Giulio.
Like, it was early days of the, you know...
True, they hadn't perfected it yet.
I don't even know if he really had a permission to do it or anything. If it was just not like a reconnaissance thing. Like, this'll work well, you know.
Fireworks, cool.
First appearing in a 1938 Batman comic, Batman's bat-themed ninja stars are called what? A portmanteau of bat and a traditional throwing weapon.
Hmm. Bat stuff. Oh, I reckon I know what this is. I reckon this is something boomerang related. I reckon maybe like the...
What are you thinking?
The bat meringue, maybe?
The bat meringue.
Or like boomer bat.
Boomer bat. Well, it starts with bat. I'll give you that.
The bat boomerang. I mean, bat meringue's tidier than bat boomerang.
Mm.
The batarang. Batarang? Bat... I'm going to go with the batarang.
You are absolutely correct.
It just sounds like a hillbilly saying battering. Battering.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're absolutely correct. It is the battering, and it has existed for a long time in the Batman chronology. What's your favourite Batman film, Jasper?
Personally? I mean, it's hard to go past The Dark Knight. It's pretty good. Okay, but well, I will go past it and say Batman and Robin.
Exactly. That's what I was hoping you'd say. You can actually see a batarang from Batman and Robin if you wanted to go to the Smithsonian of all places.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
When we went to... Oh, you had COVID, so I don't think you came. When we went to Movie World, Hollywood on the Gold Coast with Saatchi and our dad, we saw some of the outfits from, I think, Batman and Robin.
Mm-hmm.
And the bat suit from Batman and Robin... is actually a bit controversial because it had nipples. And yes. Everyone was like, I don't want to see George Clooney's nipples. I think the only time anyone's ever said that.
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure there wasn't a battering because they're in much higher establishments like the Smithsonian.
Smithsonian, absolutely. Under lock and guard. Specific guard watching the batarang.
The batarang, yeah, yeah. So, 3 from 5 in that category.
Cool.
Still a tightly run affair.
Absolutely. So, your questions for round two are going to be centered on mellow.
Okay. Mellow.
Question one. The word melodramatic traces its origins to stage productions of the late 18th century and early 19th century, which by definition featured what as well as scenes? Melodramatic.
So late 18th, early 19th.
Yep.
1700s to 1800s.
Yep.
Along with scenes.
There's some scenes going on and something else that was added in.
Huh. Scenes.
So what does the mellow refer to?
Well, I'm going to take it that it's not like, you know, humour or something like that, where they had like humorous asides, because why would we have come to the word melodramatic from that? The mellow.
Yeah.
Scenes and... I reckon it might be music that kind of sets like a real like sadness to it, where the orchestra would play something that would just kind of set up how gloomy something is, or... you know, how angry someone is, maybe on the odd occasion, how happy someone is. I'm just going to say that, like, they had music underscoring it. And that makes sense because there were no projectors, no amplifiers. People in the back would have had to have listened to the music to get a sense of what was going on.
Whoa, listen to the music. It is music, correct?
Nice. Awesome.
Mellow is Greek for music.
Ah.
So, mellow equals music and drama equals drama. This is one of the few facts that I learnt from doing theatre and performance studies as my major at uni.
Really?
Yeah, melodramatic. We looked at that a little bit. But yeah, you're correct. It's kind of similar sort of stuff to opera.
Nice. I guess, yeah.
Which was really thriving around that time as well in the romantic period.
Awesome.
Question 2. Rank these beverages by most caffeine per 12 fluid ounce can. Vanilla Coke, Mellow Yellow, and Sprite.
I don't think Sprite's got any caffeine in it. Okay. I don't think so. Mellow Yellow, I don't think is available in Australia.
It's not. Yeah,
it's not,
correct.
No. I don't think it would have copped a mention unless it was fairly high caffeine, though. So I'm going to go Mellow Yellow, Vanilla Coke, and Sprite coming in last with no caffeine.
That's your final answer?
That's my final answer.
That's correct. Well done. This is according to the University of Utah, by the way. There are some varying like numbers on this, but these are unequivocally. This is unequivocally the order. But for a 12 fluid ounce can, Sprite, you're right, has zero caffeine. Vanilla Coke has 34 milligrams, and Mellow Yellow has 52.8 milligrams, which is one of the highest for soft drinks on the market. You're right. Mellow Yellow doesn't exist in Australia. It was replaced by Lift.
Oh.
But it was a sort of like lemony sort of like yellow. Mellow drink,
yeah,
you could even say. Yeah, I was researching a lot about Mellow Yellow because I wanted to write a question about it. We don't have it here anymore, but it's also quite prominent for... Do you know the Tom Cruise film Days of Thunder?
No.
Where he's like a race car driver? Mellow Yellow is like his main sponsor.
As
a result, I think that's kind of what a lot of people associate Mellow Yellow with, is like this extreme sport movie. So I think it still continues to sponsor... like sport and extreme sport sort of stuff.
That's one of those like advertising things that just would have paid absolute dividends. Oh,
absolutely,
yeah.
For sure. Well, so you're going very strong here. Question 3. According to media reports at the time, in 2017, LaMelo Ball became the youngest American man in history to sign a professional basketball contract when he joined BC Priene, a first division team from which European country? Domantas Sabonis, Darius Songaila, and Linus Kleiser are among the NBA players from this country, which has won 3 Olympic bronze medals in basketball.
Can I just get the last names of those people?
Domantas Sabonis, S-A-B-O-N-I-S.
Yep.
Darius Songaila, S-O-N-G-A-I-L-A, and Linus Kleiser, K-L-E-I-Z-A.
Okay. And the name of the team?
BC Priene. P-R-I-E-N-A-I.
When I think of countries outside of the US, well, European countries that are good at basketball, I think Greece for some reason. But none of them are jumping it to me as Greek sounding names. I think Serbia is quite good at basketball as well. I know that people make jokes because Donald Trump's son, Barron, I think we've mentioned in an earlier episode.
Friend of the show.
Very good friend of the show, Baz, is about 6'8" tall now.
He's
and
very
he's
tall.
Serbian. And everyone goes, oh my God, he's going to be like an NBA player. And so I'm going to go based on memes that I've seen, which is the best way to, you know, logic your way to an answer. I'm going to say Serbia, purely based on the meme.
You're correct that Serbia is good at basketball. One of the best players in the NBA, Nikola Jokic, is from Serbia. But this is actually Lithuania.
Lithuania?
Yeah, those sort of countries as well, up the top there of Europe, very, very into the basketball as well. LaMelo Ball also came to Australia and played for the Illawarra Hawks as part of the NBL's Next Star program. That was his sort of first contract before, oh sorry, his last contract before he went to the NBA. He now plays for the Charlotte Hornets. Very good point guard there. But
how old was he when he signed, do you say?
He was, I believe he was 16.
Let 16, me, okay, yeah, no. Like around, so it's not like he got signed at like 9, he was earmarked from that age.
No. He and his brother went and played in Lithuania, so.
There you go.
Yeah. And yeah, he played for the Illawarra Hawks as part of the Next Star program, which is the NBL's sort of program where it sort of hopes to lure people from overseas to prepare for the NBA draft. So it's like, rather than go to college, come here and play in this like professional league to get ready for the
NBA
draft.
That's pretty cool. Yeah,
yeah, it is cool. We've had a few other people go on. Some Australians as well. Josh Giddey is over playing in the US after coming through that program. Question number 4. Located near the country's northeastern border with Brazil, the city of Melo is the 9th most populous in which country and has also recorded this country's lowest ever temperature of minus 11 degrees.
Okay.
M-E-L-O.
So, northeastern border with Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to minus like 11 or something, it's not Uruguay. Because that would be on the ocean and fairly tropical, I would imagine. I'm thinking somewhere like with quite a lot of altitude. So, I'm thinking maybe Paraguay. I'm thinking Paraguay. I don't really know any other countries conclusively that I'm like definitely would have a northeastern border city with Brazil. And as well, Uruguay has a lot of like oceanic kind of space, so why you would put it somewhere extremely cold and not on the ocean strikes me as odd. I'm gonna go Paraguay.
It is actually Uruguay.
Really?
Yeah, it's its lowest ever temperature, to be fair.
Yeah, okay, fair.
Minus 11.
Is it on a port? Is it on the water?
No, okay. It's a river city. I forget the name of the river.
Right, but okay.
It's I don't really have any follow-up facts to that. It was hard to write questions for Melo.
Yeah.
But it's the 9th most popular. So it's not a big city. I think it's only got 60,000 or so people.
It's like a Wagga.
Yeah. Melo.
Melo.
You could even say. All right.
Well, Wagga's a river city as well.
Correct,
Do you know about Wagga Beach?
I don't.
There is a beach at Wagga.
Really?
Yeah, when I was at Wagga for 6 weeks for work, I thought people were like trying to pull my leg, like it's like a drop bear thing. Like, have you been to Wagga Beach yet? It was the middle of winter as well. I was like, I haven't been to Wagga Beach. And then I worked out that there was like a sand beach on the river that people go and swim at in the summer.
Yeah.
And then once I like had a little bit more trust and everything, locals started telling me about the wave, which comes at 5 o'clock.
Really?
And I think that was a lie. I never got the full answer out of that. If like someone opened like part of like a floodgate kind of system, and a wave rolled past, it really didn't seem very likely to me. But Melo, Wagga Wagga do sound like they've got a bit in common.
Question 5 to round things out in Melo. Are you familiar with the song Loser by Beck?
It's my anthem.
Fantastic. All right, you're going to like this question then. Which of these is not a real lyric from the song Loser, which appeared on Beck's breakthrough 1994 album, Mellow Gold?
Uh-huh.
A slab of turkey neck and it's hanging from a pigeon wing. B, candy cane septum and you breathe till you bleed. C, my time is a piece of wax falling on a termite.
So it's out of C. So there's not like a fourth one.
There's three.
Slab
of turkey neck and it's hanging from a pigeon wing.
Yeah.
Candy cane septum and you breathe till you bleed.
Mm.
And my time is a piece of wax falling on a termite.
Mm. I'm pretty confident it's the B that you read, the second one. Like that's pretty high on my playlist.
You like that song?
I'm pretty confident, but like he does mumble a lot of it, so he you does. Never know.
It is, in fact, Candy Cane Septum and You Breathe Till You Bleed, which was made up by me.
Awesome.
I worked very hard to write one that wasn't too ridiculous, but was still a little bit ridiculous.
It's very Beckish. It is very
Beckish. Yeah, like, I think it's got a sort of like a beat poetry sort of aspect to his, like this song particularly. Mm. I mean, I loved Beck when I was like early uni. I just listened to him, like his early albums, listened to him on repeat. So cool.
There's some very good music by Beck, for sure.
So, Harley, you've done really well in Mellow to pick up 4 points. So, at the end of round number two, it looks like you're on 8 points and I'm on 6.
Awesome. Let's keep it rolling.
Round three.
All right. Coming back into round number three. What am I hearing questions about again, Harley?
You're hearing questions about colours.
Fantastic.
Excellent. So, kicking off, I think... So, you need to name three things for this. Okay. Three of three.
Great.
I reckon if you get all three, you get a point. If you get two of three, you get half a point.
Fantastic.
How does that sound?
Sounds good.
Name all three members of the American rock band Green Day.
Oh, okay. Green Day.
Yes. Green being a colour, notably.
Yes, absolutely. And day being a day. I know that the lead singer is Billy Joe Armstrong.
Yes.
I know that the drummer's called Trey Cool.
Indeed.
And I think the bass player is called, like, Mike, maybe? Like, like Mike. I feel like it's a really derby last name. Like,
it is,
like
yeah.
Mike Durnt or something. Or, like, Mike, like... I think it's Mike Durnt. That's what I'm going to go with.
You got the point for 3 of 3 there. And my fun fact is Trey Cool's birth name is not Trey Cool. It is indeed Frank Edwin Wright III.
It's also a pretty cool name.
Yes, and we all know the fact.
I'll tell us in it. About, tell us anyway.
Trey Cool, in a high school unicycle accident that involved him falling off a stage, actually lost a testicle.
Yeah, that's harrowing.
And I looked it up before I was going to say it on air. It's true.
It you watched true. It? Wait.
No, I didn't watch a video of it. No, no.
Well, I don't think he's like testicle falls out. Like, I don't think you see that in the video. I probably see a guy like injuring himself.
I don't think there's a video of it anyway, because it would have been in like
the 80s. Been a while. Yeah,
but no, like it's not like an urban legend like Marilyn Manson's ribs or anything like that. Like, no, it's like confirmed. Yeah,
bro, do you know that the drummer for Green Day had a testicle removed so he could ride on a unicycle?
Exactly.
Can you imagine like being in the audience? That would be harrowing. Like, all right, Venice Beach, class of 1981.
Yeah.
Let's give it up for this next act in the talent quest.
Trey Cool
and his crazy unicycle. Oh my God, Trey!
No, surely it just looked like he injured himself driving.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
Then like later it was like, hey guys.
That's it's harrowing.
It's bad.
It's an awful thing to happen. We shouldn't make light of
no,
it, really.
We shouldn't.
If Trey listens?
But,
for
I mean... You've shown your respect by remembering all three members of Green Day.
You know what? I'm kind of impressed with myself that I pulled Mike Durnt.
Yeah.
How do you spell Durnt?
D-I-R-N-T.
Yeah, Durnt.
Yeah.
It's definitely Durnt.
Yeah. It sounds like he's like distantly related to Fred Durst.
Yeah. Actually, very similar.
Yeah. Okay. Colors. Question two. What country's flag is the most colorful in the world with 19 separate shades, owing to it basically having its national coat of arms smack bang in the middle of the flag? This Latin American country's motto means "Under shade I flourish," and is written in Latin at the bottom of the flag.
It's a great motto.
Under shade I flourish. I'm the best when I'm chilling.
Very true. Under shade I flourish. That sounds like that should be my Instagram bio.
Yeah.
If only it were true. Oh,
actually, it sounds kind of ghetto as well. Like, if you throw shade on me, that does.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I took it to mean like I'm best when I'm chilling.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I thought as well. Fantastic. Under shade, I flourish. Mm. Well, Latin, I was at first thinking Latin, maybe it's a country that was like British originally, but I guess like Spanish language also originates from, and French as well originates from Latin too. So that's probably not the case. Coat of arms in the middle. Like, I can't picture this flag. So I'm going to rule out ones that I can kind of... Like, I can picture Honduras. I can picture El Salvador. I can picture... I think Nicaragua. I think I can picture... Mexico. It's got, like, the eagle and snake in the middle. It's probably not that. Unless that's their coat of arms. I'm not sure. I'm going to picture Jamaica. It's just going to have to be a bit of a stab in the dark for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess that this is the flag of Barbados.
Yeah, it was none of the ones that you mentioned. It's the flag of Belize.
Okay, cool.
And some, like, so it's basically, it's a very simple flag with a coat of arms, very large in the middle of it. And the background colors are actually representing the country's major political parties.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Belize, great language to speak English in because that's its official language.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's like one of the very few in Latin America where English is the official language.
Belize isn't in the Caribbean. Hey, it's on Central America. Yeah. The actual continental America.
Mm. Anyway, moving on.
Yep.
What reddish brown color is used to describe port wine? I know you're a port wine fan. And referred to in the name of many species of owls. You're a port wine fan, aren't you, Jasper?
I don't mind a bit of port.
Yeah.
At Christmas, it tastes like liquid Christmas pudding.
It's pretty tasty. Yeah.
It's nice on like a cold night, I reckon. Mm. Bit of port around the fire.
Oh God, you're pretentious.
Yeah, I've lost touch with the common man, that's for sure. Bit of port wine around the fire, reading our Hemingway together.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Another friend of the show, Ernest Hemingway. I think he's gone before, Hemingway.
Yeah. Do you smoke a pipe when you're...
a little bit. I wear my sailor hat.
Yeah.
Think about grace under pressure and maybe go outside and shoot some buffalo if there's any hanging around.
Indeed.
I should know this. Burgundy was my first thought, but I don't think it is. I think it's like owl. I think the owl thing I need it. It's like a tawny? Is it like a tawny owl? Mm. I think tawny is a brown color as well. I'm gonna say tawny.
You're absolutely correct.
Right,
okay, it is a tawny. You might have heard of it. I think it's called a tawny frogmouth.
Tawny frogmouth.
I've actually rescued a tawny frogmouth.
They are scary looking animals.
Oh, and their claws.
Do they have claws?
Yeah, like, oh, and so it had been. It was in Albury. It had been hit by a car and was stunned with a broken wing.
Was it on the road?
In the middle of the road, and like. The amount of people that like were willing to just slowly drive around it.
Yeah.
And we got it in a box. And I think I lost it, one of your towels maybe in the process.
I was wondering about that one.
The actual fact that I was going to throw out was that the word tawny actually has this lineage to the same word as tanned.
Hmm.
And it was originally used to refer to tanned leather.
Should I come back from the beach? Oh, mate, looking a bit tawny
today.
Looking
a bit tawny. Oh. Yeah.
Did you go up to Fiji for the weekend, did you?
Yes.
Oh, Mr. Tawny here.
Awesome. So you're on 2 from 3 here in colours.
Yeah.
On one end of the colour spectroscopy...
yep.
...is infrared.
Okay.
What lies at the other end?
Is this the visible light thing?
So you mean the spectroscopy? Yes.
Sorry, that's exactly what I meant, the spectroscopy. Infrared, that's like the smallest waves on the, like the sort of I'm doing hand gestures that the listeners can't see, but I think like the least hectic of the waves on the spectroscopy.
On the spectroscopy, indeed.
Spectroscopy. It's a fun word to say. I think it's like microwaves, I think, is the lowest, or like...
Yeah, no, but like visible, we talk about infrared at one end, and we talk about something else that's like just out of being visible.
I'm confused.
It's also a color, basically, what I'm getting at. It's not like microwave.
Oh, okay,
gotcha. I don't want you to go down, like, because the answer's like a colorful answer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. In that case, I might guess ultraviolet.
You're absolutely correct. It is ultraviolet, which is a pretty cool word, hey?
Yeah.
Smack bang in the middle is green.
Not as good.
Not as good, no.
Okay, sorry. This is part of the visible light spectrum. Like, it's
At one end, like, you stop seeing at infrared.
Yeah.
The other end, you stop seeing at ultraviolet.
Oh, sure, okay.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, ultraviolet rays, as in, like, from the sun.
Yeah.
Those rays. Oh, right.
Yep.
Cool.
Okay, so, 3 from 4.
Great.
Doing well. Final question. The Redheaded Stranger is a nickname of film starring... an album by what country music singer who has long since turned grey?
Yeah, I could just tell from the start of the question this is going to be a country music question. Just thought something about the way you delivered it. I just knew it was going to be country music. Redheaded Stranger. Oh, like William Nelson, perhaps. He's got grey hair.
Yeah.
Country music. And the fact that you said his hair has long since turned grey leads me to believe he's still alive.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't have hair if he was... Just so we're clear on that point.
Yeah.
Look, I was just going to guess Willie Nelson. I know he's a favourite of yours.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. It's Willie Nelson.
Fantastic.
The Redheaded Stranger album spawned Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain, which is a cover of a country music staple. And I thought, now that you mentioned he's still alive, I don't know if you know, one of his most recent singles to chart in the country things, I think it was about 5 years ago, it's called Still Not Dead, because apparently he's had multiple scares where people have announced that he's dead and people, like friends, have been like, is it true? And he goes, no, I'm still not dead.
What, so like, they're catching up with coffee for Willie Nelson. They go, is it true that you're dead? And he goes, no, I'm good. Yeah, flat white, please. What?
Like, no. The lyrics are like, oh, I woke up still not dead again today. The news said I had passed away. Don't bury me. I've got a show to play. I woke up still not dead again today.
It's good.
He sits down and writes a lot of like very rambling poems and mashes them into a song. You're doing very well. 4 out of 5. So that finishes you for the show on...
10 points.
10 points.
So for you to claim victory here outright, you need 3 points out of 5.
Okay.
And the category is, that's a first for me.
That's a first for me. Okay.
Question 1. After he was killed off in the 1975 novel Curtain, which fictional character became the first to receive a front page obituary in the New York Times? A section of the obituary reads, "The news of his death, given by Dame Agatha, was not unexpected."
I think we've had this as a question at a trivia night, perhaps.
We may have.
Or maybe in a pre-production episode that we made.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, you've listened fairly recently to all of the ones we've released.
Yeah, I don't think it would have been in any of the episodes that...
is released.
We've released.
I think we got it at a trivia night, perhaps.
It's a fun fact.
So the Dame Agatha is the giveaway, but like it has... the obituary has very... sprawling descriptions of, I believe it's Sherlock. No, sorry, it's Poirot.
Jeez, you're nearly talking yourself out of that. You're correct. It is
Hercule
Poirot. That's correct. And Curtin was his last appearance, but of course he's been seen in television and films since then. So
I thought you were dead. I was.
So don't despair. Hercule Poirot still kicking strong. That's correct. So a strong start here from yourself, Harley. Oh, it surprised me that no one before 1975 was given an obituary.
No characters.
No character. No fictional character.
Who before that? You know, someone from I Love Lucy or something.
Yeah, I don't know that Lucy dies in I Love Lucy, though.
No, yeah. But, like, I mean, that I think that was... like, mass media was really sort of becoming a thing at that point. It was stopping to be regional.
True.
You know?
True. All right. Well, we got another US president question here as number 2.
Awesome.
So we've the US president quota
we're squeezing everything
off the charts today. In 1918, which US president became the first to travel to Europe while in office, and for what purpose did he go?
1918?
Yeah.
I know that either John Adams or John Quincy Adams' wife was English born.
Okay.
And Ben Franklin was a bit before that. Ben Franklin was a noted Francophile. Loved the French people. Which is a very rare trait when you think about it. Now, I'm going to go... I think he might have been a bit... I think... well, John Quincy Adams... I'm trying to think. No, I'll just go John Adams. And my guess is it was to, you know, reach out a hand with the English and the British and say, you know, sorry for party rocking and so on. The thing that leads me to believe that is I think John Adams' wife was actually English.
So the answer here is actually friend of the show, Woodrow Wilson, again.
Sorry, did he say 1818 or 1918?
1918.
Oh, gosh, I'm dopey.
1918. So he didn't actually go to Europe to say sorry for party rocking. He travelled to France for the Paris Peace Conference, which is League where the League of Nations was established. On his trip, Wilson spent 9 months away from the US, which as of 2024 remains the longest time a sitting president has spent out of the country.
Yeah, I must have like manifested that it was 1818. I can't fathom that no US president went to Europe until...
1918, hey.
1918, wow.
Just chilling. I feel like maybe Europe wasn't, you know, going to England particularly, maybe not high on the priorities for the early presidents.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. No, there you go. I've fumbled that, mate. That's gone straight to the keeper.
I probably should have corrected you on that maybe, but...
No. Let's play a good competitive game.
All right, question 3. In 1978, UNESCO inscribed what as the first ever World Heritage Site? Humans are first known to have visited this site in 1535 when a Panamanian bishop drifted off course on his way to Peru.
So, can you just describe the World Heritage Site? Sorry, did it?
In 1978, UNESCO inscribed what? As the first ever World Heritage Site.
So not natural or man-made. Going from Panama to Peru. Panama. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm sure that was that was on the road trip playlist. Yeah. Water trip playlist, in a way.
Yeah. I would think it would be...
But you're right. It can be something natural or something
man-made. Yeah. Look, I think it was probably Machu Picchu and the civilization had long since gone. And he was like, you know... Like, Viva La Vida would have been playing in his AirPods at that point. I reckon it's probably Machu Picchu.
Like, he drifted off course to get there. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, he went to somewhere when he was trying to get to Peru, and he missed Peru.
Oh. You're helping me too much.
No, I just felt bad about the last one.
I reckon the Galapagos Islands is what you're getting at now. But, I feel a bit dirty for taking that. Give me half a point.
All right, well, I can give you half a point if you want, but it is the Galapagos Islands.
Yeah.
You're right. The Galapagos Islands today are home to roughly 9,000 different species of animals, so known for their biological or their biodiversity, you may even say.
Yeah, honestly.
Is it there?
Yeah, yeah.
Territory of Ecuador.
Territory of Ecuador, yeah. Yeah, I guess you said when humans first. I mean, it's not like Machu Picchu is like natural as a formation. Yeah. Man, he's not a good navigator.
Yeah, yeah. Like, stick to being a bishop.
A lot of faith in God.
Yeah, yeah. Stick to being a bishop, Mr. Panamanian bishop. You're flat out with that.
Yeah.
Question four. Painted in 1871, housed at the Musée d'Orsay since 2019, and central to the plot of an iconic character's first feature film, the painting Arrangement in Grey and Black Number 1 is better known by what title?
I know this.
Do you know this painting?
I think I know this.
Is it a painting that's quite big?
It's quite big.
Wouldn't be good if it was microscopic.
No, yeah. I very nearly, until you said that it had another name, I was thinking we're going Robert Langdon and the Mona Lisa or you know.
Da Vinci Code.
I was thinking the Da Vinci Code, Although Angels and Demons was... But no, it's Whistler's Mother. I need to be careful not to say Stifler's I'm pretty sure it's Whistler's Mother from the Bean film, which is called...
It's just called Bean. The Ultimate Disaster Movie, I think it's called.
Yeah, yeah. Wouldn't be good if it was microscopic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is called Whistler's Mother. When I was writing this question, I was like, Whistler's Mother, who painted that again? It is by Whistler. So that was good for me. Arrangement in Grey and Black Number 1, which if anyone can picture it, it's this old lady sitting at a chair, and it's quite a sort of austere sort of looking painting, but quite iconic American artwork.
Yes, yes.
Well, Harley, you're on to the last question here, and I've crunched the numbers. To win the game, you need to get this right.
Okay. Yeah, it's weird that we always end up in this spot.
The producers have crunched the numbers, and they've confirmed to me that you definitely... The audience are looking... Well, they're sitting on with bated breath. Look at them.
Yes.
They've put their popcorn down. Some of them have even brought signs cheering for you. Others have brought signs disparaging you.
Yeah, yeah. So, there was one that was a bit rude.
Actually, that person's been kicked out. You know, keep him out. Just, I can see him wanting to get back. Keep him away. Okay, question five. The animated film Big Bug Man was set to be the last film and first voiceover performance of which two-time Oscar winner until its release was permanently cancelled shortly after his death in 2004?
2004 death?
For a two-time Oscar winner.
Two-time Oscar winner? Two-time Oscar winner. It was going to be, and it was a voice.
It was his first ever voice performance.
Wow.
Voiceover.
You know who died around that time who I reckon very likely could have won an Oscar?
Who?
Dumbledore.
Okay.
Which I can't actually... Like, Richard Griffiths comes to mind, but that might be Uncle Vernon.
That's Uncle Vernon.
Oh, is it? Okay. Well, I don't know. Well, that no, it's MacArthur Park guy is his name. But yeah. 2004, double Oscar winner. I'm bad with this kind of thing. This is. I need to read up on this. I wonder if it's someone like Gregory Peck or someone that won them a long, long time ago. But Gregory Peck wasn't concerned with, you know, that kind of thing.
You're closer with Gregory Peck, I would say.
Now, Marlon Brando, I think, had been dead for a while. Someone real old like that. And Marlon Brando would have won more than two Oscars, surely. Like, see, that is like the full extent of my knowledge of actors from like the 50s and stuff. I reckon Marlon Brando is going to be my guess.
Congratulations, mate. You backed yourself into it. It is Marlon Brando. So let me tell you. Let me tell you about this. Only weeks before his death, Marlon Brando recorded his lines for the character of Mrs. Sour, an old lady who runs the corrupt Mrs. Sour Candy Company in the film Big Bug Man. The recording took place at Brando's home, and by that point, the 80-year-old was so frail he required oxygen 6 hours a day. According to the film's director, Brando wore a wig to get into character while recording, and later described the part as the most fun he'd had since playing Mark Antony in the 1953 film version of Julius Caesar, which, just for the record, is before The Godfather and before Apocalypse Now. So,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, you know what? Don Corleone? Screw that. Yeah, I want to play an old lady in Big Bug Man.
From my own bedroom, wearing a wig with just a microphone.
Can you imagine sitting in on that? Like, old man Marlon Brando, like, looking like with an oxygen tank at the ready.
Mm.
He's wearing a wig, going like, "This is my candy company. You stay away, okay?"
All these.
What do you think he was doing? A voice like a, "This is my candy company. Stay away, okay?"
I like the thought that, because he wasn't a great dude, was he? He was a bit of a dick.
Like, I don't know. I never knew him personally.
There you go.
So it looks like at the end of today's episode, Harley, you've snatched the lead back and have been crowned as the trivia champ.
Excellent.
Harley, you are the champ. Jasper, you are the chump.
So that concludes another episode of Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump. Thanks for bearing with us while we took a little bit of a break. Like we said, it was a kind of a busy time for us. So we're back now. We've got a couple more episodes to wrap season one up with. Harley, you've become the champ again in our first episode in front of a live studio audience. Is there anything that you'd like to say to round out today's episode?
I just want to remind the haters that, in fact, I do flourish under shade like the great nation of Belize. So
fantastic. Well, on behalf of Jasper and of Harley, Belize to some, that was Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you all.
Trivia is the real winner here. I think we can all agree.